So I want to start by saying, I have these notes, but they're actually not a talk. They're actually just different ideas about the topic we're going to be sharing. But it will mostly be coming from suggesting things and inviting you to respond, perhaps. Some of you were present at one or both of the half days I did in December, and those of you who were there may recall what we did, which was I was really interested in having people put together lists of topics and questions that were really relevant and meaningful to them. Because I like to walk into groups and know that I'm speaking or we're interacting around topics that are really alive and present for people. So I ended up with a list, and one of the most frequent, not surprisingly, but one of the most frequently brought up topics, and this is what I want to find some way of sharing, is questions around aging, illness, and death. That's a big topic. That's a huge topic. So one thing I want to do is sort of figure out what access we want, where we want to go with that topic today. I feel like that's the main thing I've been teaching for all these years, and since I've taught before 2004, but it was in 2004 that I started teaching in Santa Cruz, and teaching a lot, and actually one of my first groups that went on for years. I was just looking up the notes this morning, and all I called it was the death class. So the death class lasted for a number of years, times we met weekly and sometimes monthly, and it was really allowing the reflection on our own death and impermanence to be the major teacher and exploration. But some of you participated and went into many, many classes over the years, using books, The Grace in Aging, The Grace in Dying, The Five Invitations, and lots of other things. Had a day-long on women and aging and other day-longs like that. And I remember, I had forgotten this, but I did a group at Vipassana Santa Cruz for people with aging parents, and arranged some programs about end-of-life issues. So, recently, and I think a couple of you were there, last fall I gave a talk at Ocean Gate on terror management theory. And terror management theory it was sort of the inspiration for the talk. It's a whole theory, psychological theory, about how we structure our entire lives around trying to avoid and deny death, the terror of death. So, so this is part of me. When I was thinking about it, I'm like, oh God, I've said enough. I've said everything I have to say. I've said enough. There's nothing more to say. But the truth of the matter is there probably is nothing more to say. And it's an ongoing, everyday, continual exploration throughout this life and future ones, if you believe in that. It's an ongoing process. Our relationship to our understanding, our relationship to our feelings, our relationship to what's going on in our lives related to aging, illness. I also like to throw in injury. I don't usually use that word, but I think injury is under the category of illness and death. So not only have I been, has it been a major part of what I teach explicitly, it's always implicitly a part, but for me, it brought me to the Dharma in the beginning. When I was a teenager, I began reflecting on the conundrum or the difficulty in really grasping life and its eventual death. So some of the questions that specifically came up that were written down were pretty broad, but how do I cope with anxiety of death, and how can the Dharma teachings be of help? What's the path with aging, illness, and death? Death and dying, facing it, preparing for it, what is it? And more about the Buddhist teachings on aging. But what I want today is I want to know what's alive for you around this topic. What's alive right now for you people here with me this morning? And you have something that's alive for you right now? Is that what you?
Yeah, I just put it out of my mind, but okay, it's something about that part of me I realize wants a solution that doesn't exist, and that's why I'm not quite satisfied with these talks. And another part of that is that the reality of it, when I have some kind of injury or somebody dies nearby near me, is so much different than I thought.
Okay, I forgot. I want to use this to help us all here, and also to help us hear each other. So the first part is you realize you want a solution to something for which there is no solution. Is that correct? And that happens to be right in here with some of the things I wanted to say. And so you said then why then you feel, what word did you use? Frustrated?
Still searching, yeah, still looking, yeah.
Yeah. And are you still looking for an answer?
Well, some part of me's given up.
Yeah.
But then I come back with the next threat.
So, and you said talks are frustrating, I think, on it.
Disappointing.
Why? Disappointing. What? Why? Because you
don't have the total answer.
Because I don't have a total answer.
But there might be a tease.
Okay, all right. And then the second part was, remind me again.
The experienced reality of threat is so much different than when I'm sitting in my comfy chair reading about it. When I kind of think I've made some progress and figured it out, and then boomerang back.
Okay. Oh, thank you. How about anybody else? I'm going to jot some of these down, and we'll maybe have a dialogue. Are you okay with passing the mic?
For a long time, I have noticed a lot of sadness in me. These days, I'm thinking, I know that the sadness is grieving. And recently I heard someone say that we do a lot to avoid our grief and think, oh, I've grieved enough. And this is not grief for anyone in particular, but it's grief for everything. And grief for my own coming death, and it's coming closer all the time, and it's terrifying. And so I get terror and grief all mixed up.
Lovely, thank you. That's in my notes here too. Whole section on grief. Okay, somebody else. Something directly about your own experience.
I like to reflect on the three aspects of existence, and that would be dukkha, anatta, and anicca. And what I found that I use to address my own grief or my own fear is anicca. And I use it in my practice. And if I get enough into it, I realize that I'm not solid, that I'm sort of this mass of energy, and that it's constantly changing. And that really death might be very welcoming if it's a good experience of not-self. And I always experience through God were unsatisfactoriness. So I just sort of filtered through those three aspects, and it seems to be a very pleasant experience, which might be a little trap too, but it's very interesting to me. It's what I'm practicing now.
Okay. Yeah. Is there a, and that's wonderful, and that's in here in my notes too. you're all so on target, or I'm on target with you, or we're just doing a good job here. I don't know. Is there within that a place anywhere you feel, you may not, so I'm not suggesting you do, that you feel you need a little more, you're sort of more guidance or more something, or there's some, in this reflection on death and impermanence that you're talking about?
Well, when I listen to Dhamma talks given by monastics, I get this sense that relinquishment is really important in your entire life experience. And that would include relinquishment of your physical body, mm-hmm. right? And it also includes another, all kinds of other aspects of relinquishment. So the only problem with me going to that relinquishment aspect is that I'm not really relinquishing that much. I'm really holding tight to a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. You're aware of holding tight.
Yeah, and it's like my attachment of my tongue properly.
Yeah.
And so that kind of puts me into a space where, it's not very good. I have all this attachment, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So I try to stay away from that one.
Yeah.
But I find your Dhamma talk is very good, very inspiring. And all the, I did study with Carla, with the books that she mentioned. And they're wonderful, especially the five invitations, that one is really great.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay.
So I guess one thing that's been prominent on my mind lately is not so much about my own death, but about my mother's death. And in particular, like just trying to figure out how do I, my dad died a few years ago and I felt like it went very smoothly. I mean, as you know, I miss him and whatever, but like I didn't feel like I felt like I dealt with it well. I dealt with the end of his life well and sort of know very little unfinished business. And with my mom, my guess is there's a lot it could be hand, I could handle her whole, she's fine right now, but she's old, you know? And that, I guess what I've been thinking about is how do I figure out in advance, how do I figure out what I would like to talk to her about, or what I would like to ask her, or what, like how to have, just even what conversations to have for both of us, like so that when she dies, I feel like, okay, kind of I did right by her and I did right by me, and that sort of we both went as far as we could given our own conditioning and where we are, and to sort of to make the end of her, just the end of her life and the end of the relationship as you know, as good as and healthy as it can be. And I think it's very, I had one huge insight about something I talked to her about at a retreat, actually. But I think it's a really hard thing to, I would love any thoughts that you or anybody else have about how to even approach that, how to figure that out. I think it's really difficult. I find it really difficult.
Okay. All right, great, thank you. So, thank you. So we have a lot of rich material already to speak to, but I just want to see if there's anybody else sitting with something, and we'll see if we can sort of, if I don't know how sharp I am this morning, but I would like to weave it all together somehow, but go ahead.
You'll be sharp enough. I recently turned 70, and I'm finding this birthday to be different than other zero birthdays. Mm-hmm. I don't feel any different, but what's different is this sense that unlike being 50, 60, whatever, this one, I'm feeling the potential limitations. Let me take away that modifier, the limitations that will be coming as I get older. I have a couple of questions. One is, I'm thinking about what is it that I should be doing with my life now, while I can still do it. Realizing, I'm starting to think about things like, I'll be doing something and thinking, you know, 10 years from now or 15 years from now, I'm not going to be able to do this. I've never thought like that before. And the second question is, there is a constant stream of people I know now who are ill or dying. I expect that will be the case the rest of my life. Now, what does one do with that? A part of it is, it's a wonderful opportunity to learn from them. How do they go through these things that I, at some point, am going to go through? We're all going to go through, right? But there's also this grief and sense of loss that goes with it. So, dealing with those two questions. Thank you.
I would like to go myself. Since I have the mic.
Go.
Go.
So often I'm experiencing my fear of death from a pretty fractured young place.
From a
fractured young place. And I piggyback Joy's. A lot of my sense of grief has a lot of terror combined with it. I'm going through the stages of grief where I got pretty fractured around that time. My parents were killed by a drunk driver when I was 6. And so I thought a lot of my mat time is allowing for the stuff that I just shoved down for so many years. It can be really helpful to realize it's not going to always feel bad, and the death sometimes can feel like a release. And you know, I'm bouncing ages, and I'm experiencing some body memories of that 6-year-old terror at times when I'm contemplating my death as a 53-year-old woman.
Thank you. Can you hold on to that until we need it again? Okay. Are you sure you're okay getting up down?
That's good for me, actually.
I know sometimes I like to be a mic runner because I get to run around and get some. I'm just saying, but I can't do both. First, I want to say that, you know, thank you all for sharing what you did share. And I'll try to, you know, we have half an hour. We're not going to get to the end of this, if there were an end, which there isn't. But we'll do what we can in the next 30 minutes in terms of touching in with these different facets of our reflections on our own and others' death. There's always the opportunity when one hears a siren to know that at the very least, probably somebody's very frightened. There's a fire or an incident or an illness or something. So with that little siren, just taking that moment to acknowledge our humanity and our vulnerability and this shared life together. And just that is a huge part of us journeying along with our facing death. I want to say that in what people said, there's different levels of questions there or concerns, and all those levels are great, and all of them are important. And I want to say from this seat, the main level I want to address is the most fundamental reality. The most fundamental reality of our impermanence, and the most fundamental reality of often our fear and resistance and confusion around that. And also the most fundamental reality that when we embrace all of that as a teacher, we will deepen and discover. Many things about ourselves, about others, about this world. I did want to just check in with what Ed, about her mother and father's, her mother's future death and her father's death, and how to talk about it, and what to do, and so forth. I'm not going to address that directly here, but it's a really good thing to address. But what I will address here is that there's a lot and more wonderful material out there related to that, and people out there related to helping guide people with that. And I want to say any guidance you get with that, with your mother, will ultimately be guidance for yourself at some point. And I happen to have, because I thought this kind of question would come up, I happen to have one of the two books I'm recommending. There's The Beginner's Guide to the End. Practical Advice for Living Life and Facing Death. Because we all need practical experience and practical suggestions, as well as the biggest perspective. So the other one is called, The Art of Dying Well. These are both newish books by Katie Butler, and they cover some of the same territory, and they both have Buddhist influence. And they're both approaching often some of the practical sides. How do you talk to others? How do you, or how do you just help somebody physically a bit who's dying? But it's from a very heartfelt place. Yeah.
That book isn't by Katie Butler, is it?
No, this is by B.J. Miller.
The way you said it sounded like they were both by Katie Butler to me.
This one, The Beginner's Guide to the End, is by B.J. Miller, who was the director of Zen Hospice. And then The Art of Dying Well is Katie Butler. She's a longtime practitioner. And I highly recommend people go to those kind of resources. And because we all need guidance in traversing the day-to-day territory. And now I'm looking at these different things and thinking about where I'd like to jump in. So maybe I'll start with the first one.
The impossible questions I was referring to, or mostly what everybody else said? There's no answer.
Looking for an answer where there's no answer. One of the most profound statements on this comes from Soren Kierkegaard, I have it written down here. Life is not a problem to be solved, but a reality to be experienced. Life is not a problem to be solved, but a reality to be experienced. And the Dharma is teaching us about that reality to be experienced, about how to experience it, how to be alive in the here and now, about being able to deepen our insight into that reality, about how we can face it and open and accept it. So this is, you know, this is sort of a modern Western mind affliction, which we all have, which is we want to see how to fix it, improve ourselves. So the first step is to recognize how you're trying to manipulate, find a better answer, get around, do an end run around death and dying, how you might secretly think, and I'm not saying this is true of you, but it's somewhat true, I think, of everybody. I hear people when they're asking these questions sometimes, and also when people are asking, how do I respond to the current world affairs. People are looking for what I'd say a magic wand or a magic pill of some kind, an answer that will solve this problem, and then they'll what? Feel okay. An answer, there's some answer, if I got it, it would solve things, it make it easier. And there's actually a little bit of truth in that. But for the most part, that's not what's needed, if it were even possible. There is no answer. There is no answer to death and dying. There is no answer or problem to solve in the face of impermanence. And the fact, the most important thing, that there actually is no answer is the fact that no answer is the most important thing. And by that I mean, going back to Kierkegaard, we have to stop looking elsewhere for relief. Stop looking for something that will make it better. And one of the best teachers of this teaching, and all of you know her, is Pema Chodron. This is at the core of what she teaches. To stop giving up certainty. To stop giving up having to know. To stop giving up figuring it out, and start being awake right now. So this fact of the impermanence, and I'll just drop in here, I was going to ask, but it came up early on, that the Buddha's most fundamental teachings, as Gauri said, are the three, what's called the three marks of existence, and the primary one is anicca, or impermanence. So if you want a way to work with this, if you want a way to look at it, it is about coming face to face with the inevitable and completely impossible to ultimately avoid the reality of the fleeting nature, the impermanence, the uncertainty, the unpredictability of our existence. Again, we want to figure it out. We want to get the answer on how to do that. We want to, and then I'll be okay. Oh, if I really grasp impermanence, then I'll be okay. Yes and no. Yes, because you're actually already okay. And no, in the sense that it doesn't make things not have their challenges and their pain and their difficulty. But it gives you a kind of inner resource and strength and courage that you need. So our practice of mindfulness awareness is the constant turning toward what is true and what is real and what is here. What we feel, and this coming to terms with the reality of death and dying, isn't an overnight process. It's not one thing. It's this ongoing growth and this ongoing evolution and these ongoing series of insights and moments of letting go, of moments of accepting, of moments of courage to just be with it. It's that courage to truly acknowledge the mystery that is now. And that death is just another mystery that happens now. And that we need to go through our fears, and we need to look at our grief, which maybe I'll say a little more about. We need to acknowledge that this is our job. My first practice was in Zen practice. And the phrase that we used is, this is the great work of life and death. This is the great work of life and death. So I'm inviting all of you to actually take on this, the great work of life and death. Of being really willing to open to the mystery of it. I was, and I know at least one other person here, was at a memorial service yesterday for a Sangha member whose daughter died. And in sharing that with, there's a lot of people, I don't know, 150, 200 maybe. And sharing this with that group, sharing, just being there together, was an extraordinary experience of just, this happens. This happens to all of us. And can we just come together in love and acknowledgement? There's nothing here to solve or figure out. It's just a place to share and recognize and love together. I guess the other thing I'll say about this is giving up having to have answers will shift your Dharma practice. Now, there's a lot of levels where we can have answers. There's books, these books written, and John, is that your name? And there's ways you can approach, well, what the question, what do I do my life? And you might come up with answers and that, so forth. But the fundamental the fundamental always looking for the words and the fundamental process of awakening has nothing to do with answers. It has to do with waking up. It has to do with seeing what is. It has to do with being willing to be fully present. It has to do with feeling our deepest fears and the grief that comes with being alive. Right now, look around this room. People here. And recognize that within 1 year, 10 years, 20 years, maybe 30, 40 for some of your younger ones, we'll all be gone. All of us here. Where does that leave us? What's left when we really realize that? That's a real question. What's left when we really?
Now.
Now is left. And that now, the quality or flavor of that now? Anybody?
It takes a lot of pressure off.
What?
Takes a lot of pressure off.
Yeah. Yeah. What else about the quality of that now?
It sort of clarifies what's important. Like, we won't be here, but our impact will, you know, it will live on through.
Yeah.
I think it clarifies what's important now and, sort of points to we won't be here, but the impact that we've left on others will be here. And so, at least for me, it clarifies like, okay, sort of what do I want to do? And I don't necessarily mean to do, but like just how do I want to be today in terms of, you know, what I'm putting out there.
Anything, anybody else on that? The quality of resting and allowing in this now together with a sense of this connection of impermanence, this connection of life and death. I'll suggest a couple of things. Yeah. I hope it brings up a sense of kindness and love. What else is there? What else is there? There's now, and there's the love that's possible now. What else is there?
Well, I don't worry about not having grandkids because I don't actually think maybe it's not 30 years, maybe 100 years. I don't know what kind of impact what I do today is going to be around in 100 years, even with climate change and all that. I don't know. But it also becomes a sort of a shared emergency, like an earthquake, where we all instinctively want to gather together for now, for whatever short time we got, I drop a lot of my pettiness and protection because what I think I'm protecting against is the wrong thing.
I think it's meant to be moment to moment a wake up call. A moment to moment bringing us out of you know, the worries and the concerns and the what ifs and so forth into the what I would guess I just would call the mystery and depth. Of our life as it is unfolding in this moment. And we don't know what impact we'll have and so forth, but we know what impact we have now. To some degree, or we know what impact we can have. So that sometimes I call it the fear of vulnerability rather than the fear of death. That we're all walking around defending ourselves against this truth of our vulnerability. But once we honor it, and sort of being at that memorial service yesterday, I felt the depth of our shared vulnerability. And there's a wonder and a beauty and an inconceivableness related to it that helps me drop my pretenses and drop my petty concerns and drop my distractions. So one of the early teachings I abided by was not Buddhist, but it was Carlos Castaneda. This was in my late teens. And one of the suggestions was to always carry the awareness of your own death on your left shoulder. People remember that from... Always carry the awareness of your own death on your left shoulder and let it be your constant advisor. So what advice might, if you did that or do that right now, what advice might it be giving? And I want real responses to this.
Okay. And then I can yell, I can speak clearly. And I'll take the mic because it looks
good. I love this topic, and it is good practice. I took a year to live. I took that Stephen Levine course, and it's like death on your left shoulder. And what I left that course with was living each day as if it were worthy of my last day. I like to, that's my practice. And I do find myself worrying my capabilities as I get older, but I may lose my mind. But I'm not going to lose my heart. And as you pointed out, that's all that matters that I've discovered.
Well, according to the Buddhist suttas and Buddhist philosophy, we'll all be back. So if that's any... If that's any consolation, maybe that works for some. It always worked for me. So just the form, well, because that's not exactly clear.
I want to put out a little caveat, though. In the Buddhist teachings, that's not a good thing.
No, but I don't think I've made it to the further realms.
And it's also I actually am a person. I actually do have a sense of rebirth, so I have that. But I have to say, I'm not that happy about it. It was hard enough this time. And also, I want to say that this body and this personality and this existence will be gone. And to not use that kind of thinking to somehow have the delusion that this will go on. This right. doesn't go on. You know, our impulses and our patterns go on. So we need to still come back to that this as it stands will be gone. So, yeah, anybody else? Death as an advisor. So I want to leave you with a little reflection and a couple of questions, or they're not really questions, but they're a way of reflecting on this. So I'm going to offer you three sentences which you can then answer for yourself in whatever way you want to. What I am grateful for as I face the inevitability of my own death and the uncertainty of the future is... These are based on some Joanna Macy stuff, if you're familiar with this. What I'm grateful for as I face the inevitability of my own death and the uncertainty of the future is... And you can just... You don't have, you know, I'll go on to the next one, but just see what comes up for you. As I face the inevitability of my own death and uncertain future, what I'm afraid of is I'll say that again. As I face the inevitability of my own death and the uncertainty of the future, what I'm afraid of is... And lastly, as I face the inevitability of my own death and the uncertainty of the future, I'll try to remember, fill in the blank. Okay. So we need to come to a close here, but are there any last comments or sharing or statements? Could be about the last reflection we just did or anything that was alluded to or shared or talked about today. Okay, then without the mic, I would like to just go around the room and invite you to say one word. One word you're feeling right now, or something you, perhaps the last one you want to remember, or just something that's present with you right now. Okay? Just just one word. And we'll go around the same way we did before, but yeah. Gratitude.
Presence.
Gratitude.
Willingness.
Carmen.
Carmen.
Gratitude.
Sorry, I can't hear you.
Gratitude.
Quiet.
Gentleness.
Love.
Kindness.
Love.
Satisfied. Okay, well, thank you all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I didn't exactly, you know where this would go. It's a bit of an experiment in a way. But the way where it went, from my perspective, was my wish to bring you all back. To the depth of the here and now as it is, and to rest and trust in that. And then answers will arise from that. But without that, all the answers are going to be like out here, right? Bouncing off each other. But as you trust and relax and allow and being willing to be with the uncertainty, the wonder, the mystery and the beauty of now, then things become apparent on their own. And I see that people, including myself, I tend to want to go in the problem, so I want to do this, I want to do that, when the real job and the real gift of the Dharma is to come back home in the moment, come back home to our body, come back home to our own feelings and our own process, to come back to the journey that we're in, and trusting that. Because we don't trust that, we want the problem solved, we want things fixed, we want things answered, we want resolution. There's a freedom that comes from no resolution. So, thank you all, and you all had great other complete discussions that you offered, which I love. I love everything that you guys brought up. So, I'll do a little dedication, and then you're free to run out of here. So, take a moment to breathe, to notice your breath. Hopefully, you're already breathing. Take that moment to trust coming back. Trust that what you need will emerge if you allow yourself to be present. And take a moment to also share any of the benefits, any of the insights, any of the heartfelt kindness with each one of us here, with each one in our lives, and with each one, each being, each creature, each manifestation in our beautiful, sorrowful, wounded, exquisite planet. Next month? See you this month?